Hello, my friends. It's Monday, June 29th, 2026, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belleville, your Red State Refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, your weekly wake and bake, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. On this week's smoke session, let's talk about Idaho's new trans snitch law. Also, establishment Dems are panicking as democratic socialism is taking root. And a three-part interview with my parents celebrating their 60th anniversary. We'll learn things that even I didn't know about my folks' marriage. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
Blazing saddle, he wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to Batman.
So Friday was my parents' 60th wedding anniversary, which we all got together to celebrate by renting out a Verbo, a big old house out in Ontario, Oregon, which is on the border of Idaho, because I won't go to Idaho anymore. We boycott Idaho here at the Radical Rush Show. But anyway, we rented out this Verbo, and it was a good time because we had my mom and dad and myself and my lady love, my youngest brother, Josh, who's 15 years younger than I am, and my oldest niece, Samantha, who, let's see, she would be 15, 21, I don't know how many years. She was born in 94. You can do the math. So Josh was born in 83 and Samantha was born in 94, and we're all hanging out there at the home when, of course, comes through our social media feeds that in addition to it being my parents' 60th wedding anniversary, it is the 100th birthday of Mel Brooks. And of course, my father and I are huge Mel Brooks fans. We love everything he's ever done. And so we thought it would be interesting to just watch Blazing Saddles on the big old TV there. In the Verbo. Easy enough, right? Let's watch Blazing Saddles. So I power up the smart TV and I go to a little search feature and I type in Blazing Saddles. And sure enough, there it is. It's available on multiple platforms. You can get it on Plex. You can get it on Amazon Prime. There's a few others that were listed, but it's all for a rental. And Plex was like $2.99. Amazon was $3.99, I think. And whatever, that's fine. We can throw $3-4 down to watch Blazing Saddles. That'll be fun. So I go to do so, but of course, when I do so, it's still logged in under the homeowner's account. I don't want to charge $4 to the homeowner's account. I want to charge it to my own account. So I go to play the thing, and the TV gives us one of those QR codes. It says, point your QR, you know, phone at this QR code so that you can pay for the movie. Well, I do so, and that brings up the app on my phone, but it's logged under my name. So if I were to buy this movie, I could watch it on my phone, but I couldn't watch it on that big TV because that's logged in a different person's name. So I grab the remote and I start trying to find out how can I log out of this TV, and there does not appear to be any way to log out of that account. Okay, can I go directly to the other platform? I go, okay, so let me find the Plex platform on this big old TV. I find that. Okay, go search through that. It's logged in under the homeowner's name. All right, well, maybe I can log it out. No, you can't log it out. Can I log in my own account? No, you can't log in your own account. Frustrating as all hell. So I went round and round with these remotes for, my God, at least 20 minutes trying to log into this or log into that. Dad says, well, I've got Amazon Prime. We could rent it under my account. I said, yeah, Dad, but we'd have to log in Amazon Prime on this TV. We can't get it logged in, blah, blah, blah. Finally, I think, wait a minute, maybe we can do that Chromecast. You know, where you watch it on your phone and you push that button and it beams it to the TV. Okay, let's give that a shot. So I get it, log into Plex, and I download them or rent the movie for the $3.99. It's ready to go on my phone. So I push play. It's starting to play on my phone. And there's that little icon that says push for the Chromecast. Oh, great. I push that little Chromecast thing. Here comes the smart TV from the living room pops up in the list. Oh, good. There's the smart TV. I push that smart TV and boom, the logo comes up, Plex logo up on the TV, and it starts the little circle to spin the movie starting, and then nothing. Goes back to just the regular logo.
okay, what's going on? Am I on the Wi-Fi? Yes, I'm on the Wi-Fi. Oh, well, she's got two different Wi-Fis. There's a 5G Wi-Fi and then there's a regular Wi-Fi. Maybe the TV's on the regular Wi-Fi and I'm on the 5G and I need to switch to the regular. So I log off the 5G Wi-Fi, log on the regular Wi-Fi. Same effect. I push the Chromecast. It won't beam. It spins for a second and then doesn't do its thing. Finally, out of frustration, I say, F it, and just rent the damn movie under the homeowner's account. I'll leave her $4 later on the table. So we go ahead and watch Blazing Saddles, which is a lot of fun. And as the movie is starting, we find out that my 32-year-old niece has never seen Blazing Saddles. Oh, my God. And of course, it came about 3 minutes into the movie on her first gasp at the uttering of the N-word. So I had to give her the standard, you know, you got to know the context speech that I give to millennials for that time. And then my brother, Josh, again, who's born in 83, turns to the niece who's born in 94 and says, oh, by the way, Richard Pryor wrote all the black lines in this movie. And my niece says, is he black? My dad and I nearly break our necks in the double take. Wait, it's Richard Pryor. You don't know Richard Pryor? I was born in 1994. He didn't die until 2005. Well, I wasn't watching a bunch of R-rated stand-up as a kid, which I guess is my fault. If I'd have been around, I'd have probably taken her that kind of stuff. But there you go. That was our fun watching of Blazing Saddles. And by the end of it, my millennial niece, she thought it was fabulous, a wonderful satire. And once she understood that, you know, they were making fun of the racists, right? that was the point of the movie. She really enjoyed it. So that was my example of getting to show someone for the first time the movie Blazing Saddles on Mel Brooks' 100th birthday and my folks' 60th anniversary. A good time was had by all.
You can do what you want to us, but we're not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth the United States of America. Gentlemen!
Welcome back, everyone. It's been a minute since we've been together. I know I've had to take the past few weeks off with some emergency family business, caring for all sorts of little childrens, and they sleep early in the morning and make lots of noise, so it made it really difficult to try to record any podcasts. But I'm back in your ears, and it's been a month, so we've got to catch up on what's happening throughout the rest of the world, and meanwhile, in the USA.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Cuba has done it again. Meet Vaxira, a therapeutic cancer vaccine developed by Cuban and Argentine scientists that helps the immune system recognize and destroy lung cancer cells. Approved in both Cuba and Argentina for advanced non-small cell lung cancer. Meanwhile, here in the USA, we've given the green light to flavored vapes.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Australia is building the biggest virtual power plant on Earth, connecting hundreds of thousands of home batteries and rooftop solar systems into a single coordinated grid asset worth gigawatts of clean, dispatchable power. Meanwhile, here in the USA, you can now buy emergency generators for your home that will burn gasoline, propane, or natural gas.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
China replaced an entire bus network, 16,000 diesel buses in one city, with electric ones in under 3 years. Shenzhen, China's technology manufacturing hub across the border from Hong Kong, completed the world's first fully electric public bus fleet in 2018. Meanwhile, in the USA, less than 10% of Americans live within walking distance of reliable, high-quality transit that comes every 15 minutes.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
An electric vehicle startup backed by the Mexican government unveiled its first prototype in a ceremony featuring President Claudia Sheinbaum, who praised the project as an affordable mobility option and a showcase for homegrown engineering. A prototype of Olenia's cargo model, which resembles a small pickup truck, will be unveiled in July. Sales are expected to begin in the summer of 2027. The passenger vehicle is expected to sell for about 150,000 pesos, or roughly $8,600 American.
Meanwhile, here in the USA, you can get a Ford Transit passenger van with a V6 engine for $56,000 that gets 15 miles per gallon.
And I'm proud to be an American, where it means I know I'm free.
Sodium ion batteries just became one of the most significant clean energy breakthroughs. Chinese battery giant CATL confirmed it began manufacturing them at industrial scale in 2025. It replaces lithium with sodium, so abundant it is literally extracted from ordinary seawater and table salt. Meanwhile, in the USA, we've got SUVs that can turn all four wheels in order to fit into tighter spaces.
And I'm proud to be an American, where it means I know I'm free.
Germany has successfully engineered a revolutionary transparent solar glass that generates clean electricity while remaining completely see-through from both sides, fundamentally transforming how buildings produce energy. Meanwhile, here in the USA, we've got these neat little lawn stakes that have little solar panels on them to light LEDs at night so you can have an illuminated path.
You're an embarrassment.
You're a disgrace, an absolute disgrace.
You're not fit to shine his shoes.
You disgust me.
Until you can govern yourself, you're not fit to govern others.
And you're not fit to command it.
I don't know if you've been following the FIFA World Cup soccer tournament that's been taking place in North America. The host countries are Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Just a few notes on that. First of all, I saw somebody involved with the tournament put a post out on social media that noted that Canada, the United States, and Mexico's national teams, men's teams, all made it to the knockout rounds. And when they put the graphic up, they put up a picture of Canada and then a picture of the United States and then a picture of Mexico. And then they put the first letter of each country in a large block font over the top of that picture, left to right. Canada, United States, Mexico, C, U, M. Yes, they literally put cum on their post to celebrate the three countries hosting the World Cup, making it to the knockout rounds. It's like, I see what you did there. God, is the whole world being run by 12-year-old boys at this point? It seems to be. Now, despite the fact that things are going terribly here in the United States, many people have come to see the World Cup. We're seeing all these posts from, you know, the Scots, you know, the Tartan Army got into Boston and everybody's going crazy for them. And the Norwegians with their Norwegian rowing thing. And I've seen that clip going around. And I got thinking, gosh, I'm sure I'm seeing a lot of clips going around about all the white fans and how the white fans are so happy and how much they love America. We're seeing all these posts going around about the European visitors love ranch dressing. Or they've had Texas barbecue for the first time. I guess I did see one Japanese guy having Texas barbecue. So maybe it's not all just the white fans. But notice not a whole lot of celebration of the black or brown fans. And in fact, fuck us when this whole World Cup thing, man. It's just been awful. So you follow what they've been doing to Iran, right? The country that we went and bombed for no cause whatsoever, got ourselves caught to another quagmire. Bombed a girls' school, killed 168 young girls. The Iranian team comes to play their games in the United States. They're wearing a little pin, 168 on it. They show up with some backpacks to signify the loss of these schoolgirls, who it seems we bombed intentionally in a double tap strike because we wanted to punish. This was the school that was by the military base, and we knew all the generals' daughters and kids went there. So, yeah, that's us now. That's the United States of America. So, on top of that, when Iran comes here to play in their World Cup games, they're not allowed to stay in the United States. They have to do their practices wherever they practice, do their games wherever they play, and then fly back to Tijuana, Mexico to be able to stay. And despite all of this, the Iranian team leaves notes for the staff in the stadiums there in Los Angeles. Thank you for this wonderful event. They just have remained classy throughout the whole thing and the way we've been treating them. But now, the latest thing they've done, oh my God. So have you followed this guy, Lumumba?
Okay, so there was a I think it's Democratic Republic Congo. I don't know which country he's from. I'm sorry, I don't have the details on this, but there's a world leader for their country, for their independence, and there's a statue of him. And so there's a super fan who goes by the name Lumumba, takes the leader's name, who dresses up in bright colored clothing, suits, right, to resemble the leader, the slain leader, and then does the statue pose of that famous statue for the entire soccer match, remains absolutely motionless. And he's become such a phenomenon to this team. He's become a part of the team. They inducted him into the team. He's like their mascot, like their symbol for this team. And he's known around the world, and all the fans, just when he gets up there and stands there, it's an amazing sight. Well, of course, we denied him a visa. Yep. The United States of America wouldn't let this guy in to stand there in front of the crowds because, oh no, what might happen? Oh, there might be a viral video celebrating black people here in the United States. We can't have that. We can't have a black person going viral in this World Cup stage. So fuck us, man. This is just the worst thing we're putting Iran through hell. We deny Lumumba, the mascot, to be able to come here and just stand. That's all he does, dude, just stands there. And then we just got these Supreme Court decisions, you know, that's going to, oh no, the president, he can deport anyone he wants. He can just go ahead and deny the temporary protected status to the Haitians, to the Somalis, get them all out of the country, round up the Mexicans, put them into the ICE camps or deport them to Sierra Leone or Eritrea or places they've never been before. Wipe out the black representation in Congress by eliminating the rest of the Voting Rights Act. Oh, but welcome in the white South Afrikaners. Come on in, white, repressed white people. Fuck this Nazi regime. And Bill Maher, I understand, the other day on his show, had a big long rant about, we have to put all that aside. We shouldn't be so sad sacks about America and its 250th birthday. We should be celebrating. Don't let Donald Trump take. Fuck you, Bill Maher. This is the country. Look, I served this country. Yeah, sure, it was playing bass in the army band, but that was more than the commander-in-chief served. I used to get goosebumps when I'd hear the national anthem. I'd swell up with pride, saluting the same stars and stripes that flew on the moon. The same stars and stripes that starving African kids would see on a bag of rice. The same stars and stripes that kids all around the world would see when they're getting inoculations against deadly diseases. The same stars and stripes that represented the leader in the world at academic excellence, the pursuit of equality, the promotion of democracy. And yeah, I know, sure, it was a rose-colored teenage Reagan propagandized lens to be looking at America through. But it was something I believed. It was something I was willing to shoot someone over. It was something I was willing to be shot over. It's something I really haven't felt since the Obama years. The Obama years. A span of black president to gay marriage with weed legalization in between. That's my USA. That's the USA I root for. That's the USA where the underdogs overcome overwhelming authorities, overwhelming power, overwhelming odds, to beat those who've always kept them down, to beat the oppressors, to beat the empire, the patriots versus the redcoats, the abolitionists versus the slavers, Delta House versus Dean Wormer. So to have now a President Dean Wormer and Vice President Greg Marmalard and Chief of Staff Niedermeyer in charge of America's 250th birthday party? Well, hell, it's going over for me like Al Sharpton at a Klan rally. So I live for the hope that we get through these last couple of Trump years and that the backlash in 2028 to the blacklash of 2016 to the 2008 election of our first black president, I hope this backlash, for the first time in my life, includes some consequences for the domestic enemies of the United States of America, known as the Republican Party.
brings us together today. Marriage, that blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream.
All right, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of the Radical Russ Show. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, of course, and we are joined on this occasion for a very rare instance on my show because, as you know, I don't really do interviews because I like the sound of my own voice. Heck with everyone else's. But joining me today on the day of their 60th wedding anniversary. I know it was yesterday, but we're going to pretend we recorded yesterday. Yeah. The day of their 60th wedding anniversary, John and Jackie Belville, my parents, welcome to the show.
Hello, well, thank Russell.
You. We love you.
They are definitely in the top two listeners of the show, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, we are.
Yes, yeah.
So
I think I'm top one.
Top one listener. Yeah. There we go. So married for 60 years. And so I wanted to kind of go through that because it's such a momentous occasion. And let's start at the beginning. So I want to take us all back to the mid-1960s, I guess it would be, early 1960s. And think about when you guys met, when and where you met, and leading up to that, let's start with Dad, John. Like the week, the month, the year before that, who were you and what were you looking to do?
I was in college at the time, and I was bussing tables with my Canadian friend, and as we bussed our table, I walked by, and there was Jackie with this other girl, and they were giggling. And I thought, there's a couple of giggling girls. Maybe I can go over and, you know, put the word on them.
All right.
So I went over and introduced myself, and that was the beginning. We decided that to make a date, and we would go to the movies.
All right. So what year is this?
1965.
No, 65. 65. The fall of 65. And this is, you said, bussing table. So this is in Eastern Idaho.
Yeah, this was at
Idaho State University
at the Student Union.
Yeah.
I worked there to put myself through.
Now, Dad was born and raised in Shelley, Idaho, which is out there in Eastern Idaho, Blackfoot, that kind of area. But yep. Mom, you're from the Nampa area. So why did you go to school in Eastern Oregon?
To get away from Nampa.
you mean
it runs
Idaho.
In the family.
Yes.
I was the oldest of three and the first one in the family to go to college and decided I didn't want to do it close to home and just went over there.
Idaho State University, of course, back 1965, Boise State University is Boise Junior College.
It was junior college.
You wouldn't even think of going.
No. I didn't even really think about it. I didn't even know about it, to tell you the truth. I looked at Moscow or Idaho State University. I also looked at George Fox College because I had a uncle who was the president of George Fox College at the time.
Okay, so what are you going to college for?
Me?
Yeah.
Theater.
Theater major.
I was going to be a theater major. Yes.
Psychology.
And so when you're, this is 1965, so you are what, 19?
18.
You are?
23.
Okay. So that's well within the acceptable ranges.
Well, thank you very much. I wanted somebody to say it was okay.
Okay. So going to school and you're going to school at U of I or ISU as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just, okay, absolutely. Not just working there, but going to school. And what was your major?
My major was psychology.
Psychology. Oh, okay. So
clinical psychology.
So you meet Jackie and her giggling friend.
Yeah.
And you set up a date. And so this is 1965, and we're at the 60th anniversary in 66. So what, you dated a year or so?
About nine months.
The first thing movie we saw was Old Yeller.
Yeah. We went to Old Yeller. Yeah.
You went on a date to see Old Yeller?
Yes, that was where we went.
Yeah.
And I loved his voice. That's what started me. Yeah. Just like you, he had a radio voice.
That's right.
That's what it is.
And he sang and he played his guitar for me. And I said, I wanted to learn how to play guitar. He says, I'll teach you if you clean my apartment. I got one guitar lesson. I cleaned his apartment for the whole 9 months, but I only got one.
But you're left-handed. How could he teach you how to?
I had no idea about that at the time. I didn't know.
The left-handed guitar thing.
No.
So you've got your own apartment in Pocatello. Where are you staying?
I'm in the dorm.
In dorm.
Yeah.
The state. So this is your freshman year?
Yes. Okay. Freshman year.
And I've been going to school five years by the time I met her.
You're already 5 years?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What's the old line from Animal House? 7 years of college, down the drain.
Yeah. That's about it, yeah.
That's about right.
Okay, so in addition to, now you're just bussing tables, though. This is the day gig to pay for playing music? Are you playing music at that time?
I played music, but it was a way to put myself through school. If you were working at the student union or someplace in college, at the college, you got a break on your
tuition.
So,
Okay. Do you remember what the tuition was?
$700 a semester. Yeah.
$700
a semester.
$700 a semester.
I'm sorry. I got to pause for my Gen Z listeners that are falling out of their chairs.
No kidding. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So playing music, going through school, yeah. But you're in it for 5 years already.
Yes.
What was the prognosis for any more you had to, before graduation?
Well, I had to change majors.
Oh.
If I didn't
Two or three times.
Yeah. If I didn't change majors, that kicked me out.
Okay.
So I kept changing majors because I didn't want to go to Vietnam very bad.
That's the shadow in the background.
But I got drafted anyway.
Yeah.
So that's how that happened.
You did get drafted.
Yes, I did.
Oh.
Yeah.
Before I met him.
Yeah. I got drafted. Yeah. I went to Lackland Air Force Base, and I was there for almost 6 months, 8 months, and they let me out on a weirdo. I was a weirdo. I had a problem with migraine headaches at that time, and they said, we don't think we'd have you up on an observatory and have you
see
crack
out.
Up. Yeah, and all of a sudden can't see. So this captain that I went to see said, how bad do you want to be in the service? And I said, I joined this so I didn't get drafted into the Army. And he said, well, we can get you out of this. I said, wonderful. And they got me out. And so I went back to Pocatello and re-upped and went back to college.
Okay.
And still played music.
Okay.
Yeah.
So still go to college, 5 years in, you meet Jackie.
Yes.
You guys are dating for 9 months and then decide to get married.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anything that precipitated that decision?
A party.
Well, I had this job as a camp counselor.
No, before that though.
Huh?
Before that.
What happened?
We did kind of decide to get married. He proposed and we decided to get married and we were planning our wedding.
Yes.
And got to talking over pizza one night and we said, you know, this is getting a little expensive.
Yes.
And we didn't want my parents to have to pay for it all.
Because you got two other girls that you're going to have to pay for.
And so we kind of talked it over and they said, we said, we could fix that. We wouldn't have to pay for a wedding. Let's go to Jackpot.
Elko.
And we eloped.
Elko? Was Elko or Jackpot?
We ended up
Jackpot. Well, we started out in Jackpot.
Yeah.
Because we thought we'd go there and get married because it's close.
Yeah, but there's
no justice of the peace there.
Folks, if you don't know, Jackpot, Nevada is on the Idaho-Nevada border, just south, about 45 minutes south of Twin Falls. And, well, maybe a little more now, but for most of my life, it was four casinos and a golf course.
That's about all there is. Yeah.
Oh, but now marijuana dispensaries.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Well,
yeah. So you have to go past Jackpot into Elko, which is what, another hour and a half?
Oh, something easy. Like that. Yeah. But that's not the whole story.
Okay. Uh-oh.
We get to Jackpot. We were driving my mother's car. Mm-hmm. And we get to
Jackpot. 58 Pontiac. It was a beautiful,
gorgeous
car.
We get to Jackpot and we run out of gas 3 miles from Jackpot.
Before Jackpot.
So still in Idaho. So we're by the side of the road, and a trucker stopped.
Big truck.
You guys needed ride. So we got in with him, and he and the trucker and Byron sang road songs all the way in.
Six days on the road, and we're going to take them home tonight.
Exactly.
He let us off at the casino, it was about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Something like that.
And we decided, and we had no money, really. So we decided to call his mother, because she had some money. And should I tell him?
Go ahead.
So we call his mother. He calls his mother, and the first thing she asked him was, "Is she pregnant?" But she sent us some money so that we could go on to alcohol.
Narrator, she was not pregnant.
No,
no.
So we got the gas, got into Elko. We got married.
Well, first of all, we got into and we stayed at the Stockman Hotel. And then...
We didn't stay there yet. We were at the casino. I had to sit in the coffee shop because...
Oh, that's right.
I wasn't 21 yet.
That's right.
And he went off and played craps or something.
No,
and,
I didn't.
Anyway, we got the gas because the gas station didn't open until 7 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
So we couldn't get gas until then. So we got to the... We went to Elko. It was Sunday. Yep. The Justice of the Peace was only open from noon till 1 on Sunday.
Yep.
We got there at 12:30.
Yep.
We got in there. Didn't have a witness for us. And so the secretary obliged.
She became our witness.
She was our witness.
My best man.
Yeah. And the judge married us, but to this day, we have no idea what he said.
Who had a very problem.
Because he had a bad.
I couldn't understand bad. What he said. He said, in my judgment, and you know, put your hand in the other hand. And I couldn't understand a word this guy said. And finally, he said, that you love her and that you will for the rest of your life, and we'll see you later.
And we said, I do.
So,
and that was
so what I do.
Legally speaking, you have no idea what you swore to.
We don't have any idea. No.
We have no idea.
We're not going to find out either.
No. It's over.
It's like that Monty Python Life of Brian scene, marriage is sacred.
Yeah, that's about right.
That's about the way it was.
The guy had a really impediment, bad impediment.
Bad speech impediment.
Yeah, and then they charged us $16, which I thought she was worth it, so I paid it.
So, but all the way up to this time, you've still just got an apartment. You're not living together?
No.
This is the 60s.
No.
Yeah, this is the 60s. Okay. We can't do that.
No. So now you're married and you head back to Idaho.
Well, that's not it. That's not the end.
Oh, there's more.
There's
very much more.
So
there's more.
We get out of the Justice of the Peace and we decide to get more gas and get ready to go back. And the car breaks down.
Busted an axle.
Oh, my.
Yep.
So we wander over to a...
This is her mother's car.
Yeah.
Keep this in mind.
Oh, I forgot about telling you about calling my mother.
Oh, yeah.
When we get to the casino, call my mother. It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Wake her up. She gets on the phone. I tell her we have eloped and we're getting married. And she said, oh, okay, see you later. Click.
That was it.
My mother's rather laid back.
That tracks, actually.
Yeah, it does. It does. And so anyway, we get out of the Justice of Peace. A car breaks down. We find a mechanic. He takes a look at it. He says, I can fix it, but I don't have the part. So I have to order the part, and it won't come in until Monday.
Oh, my God.
We're stuck.
So we're stuck. So we have a little bit of money left, and so we're going to get a motel room. Okay, so we go in and get a motel room. And my husband, and this is where you get it, Russ, my husband, the clerk says, we said we just got married. And the clerk says, oh, well, then you want separate rooms, don't you? Ha, ha, ha. And my husband says, if it's cheaper, I'll take it.
Yeah, whatever's cheaper. What's cheapest?
Cheaper, I'll take it.
So, wow. So we get into the room, and it's late. We have not slept. We're tired. We're wearing the same clothes we've had on for two days.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, and he had gotten under the car to see what was wrong with it anyway. His shirt was filthy, you know. I said, I'll take a shower and I can wash our clothes off out in the shower and hang them up. He says, okay. So we do this. I'm in the shower. I get out of the shower. I turn around to the bed. He's sound asleep.
Yeah, that's our wedding night.
That was our wedding night.
There you go.
Yep.
Well, let's take a break there. And when we come back, we'll have more on the 60 years of my parents being married.
Be right back.
My friends, that's the country baseline, and you know what that means. It's time for our regular Boycott Idaho segment, the segment where I explain to you all the reasons why you should avoid the Handmaid State. Now, with 81 separate reasons to avoid the Handmaid State, and today I want to tell you about the latest one, a new law in Idaho where boys will be boys and girls will be girls, or we'll fine you $100,000. So, I just spoke with a social worker back in my home state of Idaho. She works with at-risk youth, many of them LGBTQ kids, and she was telling me about the new law that goes into effect on July 1st that forces her to report trans kids to their parents, outing them against their will, in situations where those parents may be physically hostile to such a revelation. Not for even actually transitioning and going public and actually using new pronouns and names at school, but for even bringing such subjects up to their teachers, social workers, or therapists. Should she fail to snitch on her vulnerable questioning kid within 72 hours, she and the organization she works for are subject to lawsuits from the parents, including damages and court costs, plus lawsuits from the attorney general for civil penalties up to $100,000. Damn, I thought Idaho hated weed. The maximum fine you can get for pot felonies is $50,000 in the Handmaid State. This latest bit of batshit Idaho cruelty is known as the Pediatric Secretive Transitions Parental Rights Act. According to the Idaho Code 32-1016, social transition means the process by which an individual goes from identifying with and living as a gender that corresponds to the individual's sex to identifying with and living as a gender different from the individual's sex and may involve social, legal, or physical changes, including adopting a name, pronouns, appearance, or dress that does not correspond to the individual's sex. The law also penalizes any entities that would aid and abet a minor undergoing so-called sex transition procedures, what they call gender-affirming care, which is already illegal in Idaho under the so-called Vulnerable Child Protection Act of 2025. Puberty blockers, estrogen or testosterone, or any procedure, quote, for the purpose of attempting to alter the appearance of or affirm, end quote, a child's gender, is illegal in Idaho. I mean, contrary to what a doctor thought of their infant genitalia. I mean, girls can still get boob jobs and boys can still get breast reductions, but boys can't get boob jobs and girls can't get breast reductions. Well, maybe the girls can get breast reductions if they promise to keep acting like girls with their new smaller boobies. We must protect the vulnerable children after all. That 2025 law just wasn't enough, however. Those trans kids, even without the medical care necessary to reconcile their body and mind, just kept persisting in socially transitioning. They kept having the gall to ask society to accept them as they feel themselves to be, and to provide the common courtesy of addressing them in a certain way. I mean, the ones who didn't suicide in Idaho when they lost their medical care last year. So Idaho did what Idaho does and got white straight to work on drafting a new law to address this epidemic of boys not acting properly masculine and girls not acting properly feminine. According to the law, a covered entity shall notify a minor student's parent within 72 hours of receiving any request by the minor student to participate in or facilitate the social transition of the minor student, including any request by the minor student to be referred to by pronouns or titles that do not correspond to the minor's biological sex, be referred to using names other than the minor student's legal name or a nickname or derivative thereof, either in school records or otherwise, use restrooms, locker rooms, changing rooms, or overnight lodging designated for the opposite biological sex, or participate on an athletic team or any other sex-separated school activity designed for the opposite sex. I was, of course, horrified to listen to the social worker describe how she and her coworkers and all their kids will be affected by this, how so many of the kids will shut down, afraid to be the kind of questioning adolescent we all were, how they've been counseled by their legal departments that the slightest inquiry needs to be taken seriously, how three of her coworkers have already left for other states, how she's counseling others to stay because, if they don't, what will be left for these kids to cling to in Idaho? The law states that, quote, the legislature finds that social sex transitions can inflict severe and irreversible harm to the child's well-being. And how many pediatricians are in the Idaho legislature? Well, let's see. Attorney, farmer, business owner, public speaker, homemaker, rancher, engineer, money, metals specialist. Oh, look, a clinical nurse specialist, but no, I don't find any pediatricians. Meanwhile, actual pediatricians out there will tell you that denying social transitions is what can cause the severe, irreversible harm to the transgender child. The law concludes that it is, quote, undoubtedly a parental purview and prerogative to have knowledge of and the authority to deny a child's effort at social transitions. They couldn't more plainly state that the child is the parent's property, and its identity shall be molded by the parent. It has no say in its self-expression. I guess this is consistent with a state that still has not outlawed the practice of faith healing your child to death or marrying off your 16-year-old. This fear that your child might be secretly transitioning reminds me of the gun owners who fear things like red flag laws. You're the reason why we need these laws! After hearing a number of anecdotes the social worker told me of kids she'd work with and how next month she'd have to out those questions, requests, behaviors, and dress to their parents, I realized that if I was still a high school student in Idaho, this would be Operation I Am Spartacus time. Every teacher, counselor, and therapist are now mandatory reporters for any variation of binary gender norms? Well then, my friends and I are going to give them a hell of a lot to report. Show up to class in a skirt. Ask to be called Loretta. High-five the guy and say, yes, queen! Ask, and just ask, to use the ladies' room. Every day, every class, every teacher. Force them to have to call my parents to tell them, Mr. Belleville, your son Russell just asked the drama teacher if he could get breast implants. Would you please make him stop? We're all getting tired of calling you. I can hear my dad laughing now. I mean, I've been fighting mandatory high school gender norms since high school. So come on, Idaho kids. Everybody go trans. Make the reporting of every gender variant such an overwhelming hassle that it becomes the chaff, hiding the actual trans kid from the incoming fire. So when that trans kid's unaccepting dad yells, what's this call I just got from your teacher saying you go by she, her pronouns? She can reply, oh, dad, it's just a goof, like that 6-7 thing. And when he talks to the other guys at work, they confirm, yeah, my kid's teacher called and said my boy wanted to get titties. I mean, implants, not like second base. They're all doing it to harass the teachers. That trans law makes them call. Oh, geez. I can already imagine the Idaho legislature writing the False Reporting of Social Transitioning Act of 2027.
Well, we thought we'd elope in the conventional manner.
You gonna move in with your parents?
I'm not telling you to elope.
I don't want to move in with my parents.
Why don't you just elope, or is that too old-fashioned?
Well, you could move in with my parents.
It's legal to elope at your age.
Nothing except move in with the folks.
She told me they were going to elope.
We're back with another part of the interview with my parents, John and Jackie Belleville, on the occasion of their 60th anniversary. And when we left off, Dad's fallen asleep on their wedding night in Elko, Nevada, where they're trapped with a broken down 58
Pontiac Star Chief.
Pontiac Star Chief with a broken axle waiting for a part to come in.
So beautiful car.
I imagine the part finally came in.
Yes.
And you finally got home.
We finally got home.
So at this point, is it moving into this apartment?
Wait until you hear this.
Oh, boy.
We get married.
This is the easiest interview ever.
We got married, and all of a sudden, I'm still working at this Camp Tappa Wingo. which is
Boy Scout
camp. Boy Scout camp.
In McCall.
Oh, okay. And so I figured, well, I'll just take my wife and we'll just go ahead and move in and that'll be that. So I get her dad, and her dad drives us up to Camp Tapawingo, which is out of McCall. And so we get in there, and the camp director said, well, we didn't bargain for you and have somebody. We can't have her here. You know, we just won't pay for that if you stay with the wife. So I got fired. And Jack, which is her dad, said, do you want me to go talk to him? Jack's got, got the big muscles, he'll, and boxes.
And just 20 years past being in World War II. And
he was a boxer in the army. Yes. Yeah.
And I said, no, Jack, we'll find another job someplace else, you know. And so we had to move in with her parents. And that was our marriage.
Yeah, we lived with them until school started again.
Yeah. And then back down to Pocatello.
Mm-hmm. Then back to Pocatello, did some more college and some more music.
Okay, so we're into 1966, the summer of 66, you're married. And then come around, I would suppose, 1967, around March or April, somebody gets pregnant.
I don't know who that is.
I think it was a strange boy that we...
What did we do? We were in college. I went to work for the National Reactor Testing Site in ARCO.
National Engineering Lab.
Do some
cards in those days.
Data processing punch cards. Oh, those were so much fun.
Yeah.
Because every once in a while, the machine would have a hiccup, and we played 52-card pickup.
Punch cards out of order. Younger listeners that might not know what we're talking about, we're talking about early computer technology where the binary zeros and ones were literal holes punched on a card, and then you'd fit a card into a slot, and that was maybe, 8 bytes of data, 16 bytes of data, something like that.
Yeah.
And so you'd have a rack of 100, 600 cards. That's your program, and they have to be read in order.
Yes.
Yeah, and you'd put them through the machine, and the machine would decide to go crazy, and they would literally start spewing cards out all over the floor.
Like that scene in Ghostbusters where all the card catalog is flying.
Exactly. Exactly.
That was really fun.
And the machines were huge. Oh, my.
So anyway, I'm working for the National Reactor Testing Site. They called it NERTS.
The NERTS.
Yeah. And we got pregnant. And I made the mistake of telling them that I got pregnant. You cannot work for a national reactor, radiation and all that stuff at that time. And I was.
How long before you knew you were pregnant before you told them?
Three, 4 months.
Okay. Yeah. So that explains a lot about me.
Yes, it does.
I was exposed to high levels of
radiation. That's your problem right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Ruined your life.
That's right.
You didn't even know it.
And so, he had it with college, and we met Teddy and Ray.
I started playing with Bob Jones, one-armed guitar player who was awesome, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And lead guitar player.
And so we got him and his brother, who was 17 years old, his Teddy, Uncle Teddy for you.
I was already a monster player at 17.
He could play fiddle. He won the national fiddle contest for
in Weezer
for a teenager.
Yeah.
And he won that contest, but he was a really good fiddle player. And we got together and had Linda, which is the sister. So there were the three of us, me, Linda, Ted.
The four of you.
And Bob. And off we went. We called ourselves the Outlaws.
Bobby Jones, great picture we got of Bobby. He had lost his right arm up to the elbow. And we're still talking late 60s, had a prosthetic made. And you remember those prosthetics from the 60s, they kind of had like a claw on the end.
Yeah.
But he had the claw fashioned to have a pick on it. And then he could shake his shoulder to pick like
amazingly.
Yes.
if you ever had your eyes closed, you wouldn't know it was a guy.
I played with him before he had that accident, and he was okay as a guitar player, but after he'd lost his arm, he became really good.
You know, there's the drummer for Def Leppard. He said this kind of the same thing. When he lost an arm after he came back and became a drummer, he felt he was a better drummer because he had to be good at technique.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that's the way it was with Bobby. He was just technically awesome.
Oh, yes, he was.
He was just good.
So you're embarking on becoming a road musician at the same time getting pregnant with the first kid.
You.
Me.
Yeah. Also traveling with Teddy's first wife, who was also pregnant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Two pregnant ladies.
And she was two or three months ahead of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, two pregnant ladies and all of us traveling together.
And a crazy lady that Bob picked up.
What the guitar heck players, man.
Anyway, yeah. She was nuts.
And so this touring, we're talking about, you know, north to south, east to west, where's your extreme?
Well, our band started out in a hotel in Pocatello, but then we were seen by a guy who was a booking agent. Pretty big name booking agent, Sam Gibbs, out of Wichita Falls, Texas. And he got us booked into the Cowboy Bar in Jackson Hole. And we played the entire summer in Jackson Hole. And then we went on the road and after that and played North Dakota, South Dakota,
Washington,
California, all kinds of places.
Mostly the West, Northwest.
Yeah, mostly West, Northwest, yeah.
So this is starting from before my birth, and how long you're on the road through Matt being born?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's my younger brother who's born in.
I have a story about you.
I'll go right ahead.
Yeah, I have a story about Russ, your moderator here. He was the greatest travel baby I have ever seen. We would put him in the wheel well of our car and take off for hundreds of miles. Oh, we would go 600 miles with him in that wheel well, and he'd never wake up. He just slept all the way through it. I put him in front of my drums when we'd play, and he'd sleep in front of my bass drum. It was an amazing kid to take on the road. We loved you by the way.
Good road kid.
That's yeah, you're a great road kid.
Well, you both were, really.
Yeah.
Matt was pretty good, too. Mm-hmm. We traveled until...
started school.
Kindergarten. I think the last one we did was mm-hmm. West Yellowstone when you started kindergarten.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so that would have been the last one. The one where you told the teacher... they weren't reading the charts correctly.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
I had to go see your teacher. Your teacher says, he argued with me. And I asked her, was he right? Well,
that's a different story.
Oh, that's a different story. Yeah.
No, this is the one where they were bringing up the little,
the charts,
piece of paper charts for learning your letters.
The flip charts.
C is for cat and K, yeah, whatever.
And the teacher asked you to read it, and you read it, and you also read the patent pending and the
copyright,
all that stuff, all the stuff on the bottom.
Yeah.
And so the teacher called us in and said, "I think he needs to move up into the first grade."
Yeah.
So you started school a little early.
Yeah. I was the youngest member of my senior, youngest male of my senior class.
Right.
Yeah. Gretchen was the youngest female.
Gretchen was.
Yeah. Okay. So we get through about 5 years of on the road.
Yeah.
About right somewhere in there.
Yeah.
5 years on the road. And now you've got a toddler in myself. You've got a brand new baby in Matt, and it's time to settle down. And, still playing music.
Still playing music.
What's the future look like at that point?
Well, at that point, I took off, and Sam Gibbs was, you know, I told you about Sam Gibbs, and I called him up and asked him if there was any place I could play, you know, that somebody would hire me, and he said, "Oh, get your butt down to Austin, Texas."
Yeah.
And we've got several guys that are willing to hire you as a drummer. And so I made the trip, which was, oh man, it was like 1700 miles. And I just kept going with popping pills and drinking beer, and I made it.
6 days on the road.
No wonder. I don't know how I made it. Anyway, I got there, and he set me up with Orville Couch, who had a number one seller at that time. It was called Hello Trouble. So I played with Orville, and we traveled all over the South. We played.
And you're traveling alone without?
Yeah, without Jackie. Jackie's back at home raising the kids. And I'm sending whatever money I can to her to help out. And I was only getting paid $125 a week on the road.
Yeah.
6 days a night.
Yeah.
You know, 6 days. Imagine that today.
$20 a night?
Yeah. But it was enough.
Yeah.
It was enough because Orville covered everything. Your uniforms, your meals, the motel room, everything, and paid you $125 a week.
On top, yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't that bad. And I would send her whatever I could, because there was still stuff you had to buy. And I stayed on the road with Orville for quite some time.
Yeah, back and forth all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, whenever I got close to wherever you guys were, I would make trip. We were played in Missoula, Montana, for one thing, and I traveled over from Missoula to see what was going on with you. You'd got kicked by a horse, I think, at that time.
Yes, you had. You broke your leg. Yeah.
And I came back, and you were pissed at me. You wouldn't look at me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I wasn't there to help you. You were really angry at me and wouldn't talk or nothing.
Oh.
Wouldn't hug me or nothing. And I thought, what the hell am I doing here? I'll just go back and play music, you know? So anyway, that was that story. And I stayed on the road for quite some time.
Yeah.
Played some pretty nice gigs with some pretty nice people. Blacked up Dolly Parton. She was one of them.
Yeah.
And some other big names, too. Johnny Cash and a few other big names. Yeah.
And it was a rough life.
Yeah, it was.
But neither of us knew any better.
Oh.
And I had very supportive parents.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they helped us out a lot.
Yes,
I stayed sure with them some.
I always do kind of marvel, you know, knowing grandma and grandpa and trying to think of you coming back from college with some rock musician type.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you knew my dad.
Yeah.
He was a Army vet, World War II, strong, silent, well, we called him a John Wayne type, you know, and to have a son-in-law who was a musician. Oh, and
Grandpa liked both kind of music, country and Western.
He did. He did. And so, yeah, it was a little tough on my dad.
Not your mother.
He liked him, but he didn't know how to talk to him.
Yeah, but your mother.
My mother and my husband bonded like you cannot believe.
Oh, yeah.
They were best friends from the get-go.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool.
We loved each other.
Yeah.
That's great.
That was really neat.
I still miss her. She died. And I still miss her.
Yeah.
The soup is hot. The soup is cold.
Waiter, there's a fly in my soup. I'll have the soup in my booth.
As a matter of fact, there's a fly in my soup.
Have you ever considered making a soup from scratch?
No soup for you.
Have you tasted the soup?
All right, I'll taste the soup.
Just a little more politics before we get back to part three of my interview with John and Jackie Belville, my parents, on the occasion of their 60th anniversary. But I couldn't let a podcast go by without congratulating the wins for socialism in this country. Some good things are starting to brew on the left side of the political spectrum. Of course, Seattle, Washington went and elected a Democratic Socialist mayor, and boom, Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl. New York City goes and elects a Democratic Socialist mayor, boom, the New York Knicks win the NBA championship. So if you're looking to get a championship for your city, make sure to look into Democratic Socialism. But seriously, they're trying to make the enemies of the Democratic Party, at least the ones on the right, and the Republican MAGA Party, they want to make Zoran Mamdani the face of Democratic Socialism. Ooh, the evil, scary foreigner. And so Mamdani, to his credit, is like, sure, go right ahead. Show how Democratic Socialism paid people $30 an hour to shovel snow in New York City. And wow, the snow got cleared. Show them how Democratic Socialism filled a whole bunch of potholes in the city that nobody bothered to get around to filling. the sheer joy you see coming out of New York City and the panic that you are seeing from the establishment Democrats as they see democratic socialism working, that, what do you know? Here's an idea. Do stuff that helps your base. Do stuff that helps people, and they like it. Wow. Be authentic and believe in things. They tried attacking him because Zoran Mamdani came in and endorsed three candidates that were running for office. One of them, Brad Lander, who he had co-endorsed in their ranked choice voting system for New York mayor. Lander won his seat, his congressional primary seat for the Democratic seat there in New York, unseating Dan Goldman, who'd been a long time, like 9-term congressman. He was an impeachment manager and not a bad guy necessarily, but not necessarily as progressive as you'd like to see either. And of course, the shadow of AIPAC floated above this entire proceedings because AIPAC was backing all of these establishment Democrats who are solidly in the pocket of the Israeli lobby. So they are quite upset now because the three endorsements that Mamdani made, one for Brad Lander and two for a couple other candidates whose names I do not recall, but also very progressive, very democratic socialist types, has the establishment shook. I saw an interview with James Carville where he's like, fuck it, I'm out of this party. This isn't part of my party. It's like, dude, you got one win in a three-way race 34 years ago. They're like, hang it up. Go to have some sweet tea and enjoy the LSU games, Grandpa. It's time for a new set of Democratic leadership, because since the age of Carville, the miracle that the Democrats discovered in that 92 election was, hey, if we act more like Republicans, we can bring in more money. We can get more donors. We can get money to be able to win and then establish, you know, NAFTA and the crime bill and more cops on the street and, you know, decimate our industrial base and end of welfare as we know it and destroy all that. Ugh, I don't want to get off on that rant. So it's about time the Democratic Party turned back to its actual roots, the roots of FDR socialism, New Deal socialism. The idea that, hey, we pay all these millions and millions of dollars into the taxes. Maybe it should do something for us and not just Northrop Grumman, not just Lockheed Martin, not just Pfizer, not just Aetna, not just United Health. Maybe it ought to do something for Joe Schmo, the guy who works at the deli and needs to have a bus to get back and forth to work, or the mom who's got, you know, three kids that she needs to feed, or the struggling vet who's dealing with mental health issues. Maybe that tax money ought to help some of us. That's all democratic socialism is. And maybe, just maybe, there ought not be trillionaires. Maybe there's a disorder at a certain point when you're hoarding commas and zeros in your bank account that's just unhealthy for society. Maybe you ought to be happy just being a mere centibillionaire. Just, you know, maybe you can get by on $100 billion. That's what democratic socialism is about to me. So, of course, the democratic establishment is shook up about this because the people they care about are shook about this. You know, the donor class, the crypto bros, the tech bros, all of those folks. I see this quote from Tish James. Now, credit to Letitia James in New York for going after Trump like she had promised to do. But she says, quote, all of us are a little frustrated with the Democratic Party, but you don't blow it up. That's what MAGA has done. And that's, she's referring to Mamdani. Blowing up the party by, let me get this right, running candidates in primaries and winning more votes. That's blowing up the party. But you know what? Fine. Let's blow up this party. Let's blow up the leadership of Chuck Schumer and the leadership of Hakeem Jeffries and the leadership of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the leadership that got us to this point where Trump was able to win two presidential elections. Let's do something about that leadership that failed to keep the Supreme Court in secure hands, failed to get people to retire at times when they could be replaced, failed to recognize the importance of that Supreme Court. Let's blow up that Democratic Party. Let's blow up that Democratic Party that doesn't seem to recognize the scale of the danger we are in this republic, that
can't even tiptoe up to the idea of expanding the court, expanding the House, neutering the Senate, abolishing the Electoral College, establishing Medicare for all. The kind of things that get people excited, like they're excited right now in New York City under Mamdani. That we're not votes just to be taken for granted. That we're not punching bags, always punching to the left to prove your bona fides to some mythical centrist, Republican, moderate, white, suburbanite voter that you think if you just were just a little more like Republicans, but not so mean to minorities, maybe they'll like you. They've got their party. Donald Trump has solidified what that party is and what it's going to continue to be. There are two parties now in America. One of them is going to be the racist, white, nationalist, Christian, patriarchal, heteronormative party. The baseball mom and apple pie and everybody keep your domestic violence and homosexuality in the closet. That's the party they want to go back to. That's the America they want to be again. That's one side. And the other side is rainbow flags and minorities and diversity and ethnicity and welcoming immigrants and behaving Christ-like. You know, welcoming immigrants and doing unto the least of these and all that kind of stuff that a supposedly Christian nation would do. And to close this out, I just wanted to quote from a thread that I saw on Blue Sky, and I want to give full attribution and credit to John Rogers, at John Rogers on Blue Sky, J-O-H-N, John Rogers, no D. Broom the soup. A lot of centrists are freaking out right now, and people are both reading too much and too little into the Democratic Socialist victories. But a metaphor from my career may be helpful here. I was working with a very good producer, one of the smartest people I know, and they killed a scene in a script. Just hated it. They had their reasons. Myself and the other writers didn't agree, but it was absolutely not a bad note. Just not what we'd wanted to execute. We brought back a rewritten version of the scene, which they killed, and then another, which they killed. And finally they said, guys, when I'm at a restaurant and I don't like the soup and I send it back, I don't want them to keep bringing back the same soup with changes. I don't want them to bring back the same soup with some pepper, and I don't like it, so they bring me the same soup, but now with cheese. No, I don't want the soup. Broom the soup. Everyone in the Western world right now does not want this. Whatever it is, whether churning 7 prime ministers in Britain in a decade or the anti-incumbency wave that caught Harris and 12 other leaders, they don't want how this world makes them feel. Young people don't like feeling like they'll never have a real job or home. Middle-aged people don't like feeling suddenly precarious. Nobody wants all the fucking crazy, whether it's armed thugs in the streets, insane gaslighting president, mass shootings, or wealth inequality, or inflation, or wars. They do not want this, no matter how ill-defined or possibly undefinable this is. And they certainly do not want people who are super into crypto or AI or funding ICE, but training them better. Basically, they do not want the Dem waiter, the Democratic waiter, to keep bringing them the soup slightly different. They want you to broom the fucking soup. You cannot be mad your centrist waiter who brought back, it's mostly the same soup, but better now, I promise, got yelled at. Now, the ironic thing is that these people feel this way as the inevitable result of late-stage capitalism and income inequality, but saying that makes you a socialist, apparently, rather than a guy who read Adam Smith and he warned about all of this, actually. But that's neither here nor there. They're the voters. They get to decide what they want. That's how fucking democracy works. Mamdani did not appoint these people. They got elected. Just like AOC beat Crowley, Pelosi's golden boy, fair and square. They don't want the soup. Broom the soup. Or lose.
In good times and in bad. For richer, for poorer. When we were married, babe, the justice of the peace said something about for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, remember?
In the light of day and the dark of night, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health.
To my wedded wife, to have and hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health.
So we talked about how at your wedding you had vows that you had no idea what they were.
No, I had no idea. I couldn't.
But the traditional vows are about being for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. So let me ask you, what was the richest you were in your 60 years of marriage?
Okay, my dad died and left money for me. I had $95,000 at one time, and that was in the 60s, which would have been about, Josh looked it up for, and it would have been about $1 million today in today's money. That's the richest I've ever been.
Boy, did we go through that
first. Oh boy, no kidding. Well, my cousin, Larry Farmer, wanted to buy a painting contracting business, and I loaned him the money to do about $10,000, and that was sucked money and sucked money and sucked money, mm-hmm. And it was gone before you ever, you can't believe how fast you can go through $95,000.
Yeah.
So, I don't, you know, looking back on everything, Russ, it's the memories. Mm-hmm. It's the memories. And they're priceless. They're honest to God are priceless. You can have all the money in the world and not be happy, but you can be happy with very little if you want to be. And we didn't have very much. We had each other.
Well, and you asked when was the richest we've been in the 60 years? Probably right now.
Yeah.
We're both on Social Security. We don't have a lot.
Don't have
but
much
we
money.
Live in all the times that he was on the road and all the different places we lived, we never had neighbors.
No.
That we knew.
No. Mm-hmm.
We never had a lot of friends because you're traveling too much. You can't keep a lot of good friends. And we're settled down now into an RV park that if we don't show our face out the door 2 days in a row, we have a neighbor knocking on the door asking if we're okay.
Yeah.
And so we're probably the richest now than we've ever been.
Yeah.
So,
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like I say, Russell, like I've told you, it's the memories. It's not the money.
Yeah.
It's the memories.
Well, and then the other part of that clause is in sickness and in health. And one of the major events we did was for your 60th birthday, because we had just come off of you having a major, major health issue.
Yes.
And we weren't even sure you'd make it to 60 birthday, much less 60 anniversary.
I didn't think I would.
So talk a little bit about that. When did this happen? And
I'm not 1999 or when was that?
Oh, in that area.
Or was it the one with the gastro?
No. The first one was, believe it or not, flesh-eating bacteria.
You know when you hear that ad for Jardiance? Have you ever heard the diabetic ad for Jardiance? They say one of the possible side effects is necrotizing fasciitis of the perineum.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I like to call it, fatal taint rot.
Yes.
No kidding.
And
Dad had fatal taint rot.
Yeah, he had that. Yes.
Yes, I did.
And when we found out what it was and the doctor started with this flesh-eating bacteria, they have to cut it out because antibiotics won't touch it.
Yeah.
So they have to physically remove it.
Mm-hmm.
And he went through surgery after surgery after surgery, and it wouldn't heal, and it wouldn't heal, and it wouldn't heal. Finally, one of the doctors noticed something.
Bone doctor.
Yeah, noticed that his circulation wasn't good. And so they did a angiogram, which is a total body scan kind of thing, and discovered he had no blood flowing below the waist.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, of course, it wasn't going to heal because it was on his leg where the flesh-eating bacteria was, inner thigh. And if you have no blood flowing, it's not going to heal.
Yeah.
So they had to go into surgery again to put a stent into his femoral arteries because he was getting no blood to his legs. So he had that stent put in and woke up the next morning. His feet were warm for the first time in years.
Yeah.
And so, once he had that done, he started healing. but he had lost 60 pounds.
Well, that was 135 pounds.
Yeah, he had lost a lot of weight. And the doctor that did the angiogram and set up the surgery said if he had gone about 10 days longer, he would have died.
That's that close.
So, yeah. So it was touch and go.
Yeah, so sticking through thick and thin through 60 years is just amazing. And as we celebrate this anniversary, the other thing I think about is how Mom managed to get the hat trick of having a kid in the 60s. 70s and the 80s.
That's right.
So we talked about my birth in 68, Matt come along in 71. Why in the world is Josh coming around in 83?
Whoops.
Well, first of all, I was an addict and an alcoholic, and I went through treatment.
Okay.
When you go through treatment and they do the whatever and get you sobered up, they give you tons and tons of vitamins because it helps you sober
detox.
Up.
Detox.
Yeah, detox. And so when I got home, I was really fertile. And I didn't know it. And I thought, well, it's not going to happen. No big deal. Never did, you know. Yeah, so yeah. I got nothing to worry about, you know. Between you and Matt, you know, years went by.
12.
That wasn't
12 years. Yeah.
That wasn't exactly how it happened.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Josh came along. And that was
83.
Yeah. And we actually thought about going through an abortion with him, and we decided we wouldn't. We were getting old by then.
Well, and the other problem too was that when Matt was born, the doctors did not know that we had a blood.
Because you're 36 at this point?
35.
35, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When Matt was born, apparently I had my blood had been tested, but they had given me the wrong classification.
Yep.
I'm an O negative. They had tested me and said I was O positive.
Oh.
Well, the blood disorder that happens is if the man is positive and the woman is negative, which we were, you can have a blood disorder come up because if my blood fights his blood.
Gotcha.
Kind of thing. And we did not know that after you were born because it doesn't affect the firstborn.
Right.
It affects the subsequent births. Okay. So when Matt was born, they found out he had this Rh disease, they called it. And so he had to have 3 complete blood exchanges.
Ooh.
The poor little thing. They left the umbilical cord still moist, they didn't let it dry out, and they would take a teaspoon at a time of blood out of him and then replace a teaspoon at a time in him.
Oh my.
And they had to do that 3 times before they got him completely cleaned out.
Yeah.
But luckily he was full term and healthy, and so he turned out fine.
And Joshua, we just put him under lights.
Well, yeah, and when we found out we were pregnant with Joshua, we didn't know what we were going to do.
Yeah, we worried about because abortion came up at that time.
Because he'd have the same problem.
Yeah.
Because there was no way to prevent it
right
at that time. And but when he was born, I was under care of a specialist who took care of this kind of thing. And so I got to have 9 sonograms, one every month.
Mm-hmm.
One every month. Mm-hmm. And 7 amniocentesis done. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know what an amniocentesis does.
Sounds fun.
They take a needle about this long.
Yeah.
And they stick it into
your belly.
Into your belly.
Into the baby sack.
Yeah.
To test the blood, the uterine.
She went through several of those.
To make sure that he was progressing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Why?
I was glad I had a specialist.
Yeah.
Because he really knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Well, I'd imagine after 12 years later, the technology changed a bunch.
Oh, a ton.
Yes, very much.
A ton. Yeah.
Josh
and Joshua was born the same day. I was in there. They were going to induce labor. Because they wanted him born as soon as his lungs were developed so they could help him. And the same day they had my labor induced, I was going along just fine. My doctor comes in and says, oh, we're going to slow you down. Slow me down. What's going on? And he says, well, the quads are going to be born.
He was
also the doctor for a lady who was having quadruplets.
Okay.
And they had to be born that day. And so
Josh got bumped for quads.
Josh got bumped for quads. Yeah.
That's what's wrong with him.
always picks fifth.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful time that we're having here for the 60th anniversary of my parents, John and Jackie. And for anyone out there who's new to being married, getting into their first relationship, what is the secret staying together for 60 years?
There is no secret.
Not really.
No, huh? There's no secret.
Not really.
People just always say, what's the
just
secret?
Just love each other. That's the only secret, isn't it?
Yeah. Part of it, one of my favorite things to say is don't sweat the small stuff.
And it's all small stuff. Yeah.
But quit worrying about piddling things.
Yeah.
It's not important.
I think it's just loving each other.
Yeah.
And telling each other that you love them every single day of your life.
And I heard one, I think it was from Lori.
Yes.
Your lady love. Yes. That said, you just wake up every morning expecting to love the person.
Yeah.
You have to make up your mind what you're going to do.
That's right.
And expect every day to be a new day with that person, you know?
Marriage is not an option. Once you get married, it's not an option anymore.
You just keep working on it.
But a lot of people take it that way. So, well, you know, if it doesn't work out, we can always get a divorce. Bullshit. You can't just always get a divorce. That's just ridiculous. You know, if you make a commitment, then you need to stick by the commitment you make. And we made a commitment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we made it, both of us felt the same way.
Yeah.
This is going to last, no matter what. And we went through some tough times for us.
Oh, yeah.
I will make a caveat on that.
Oh, look out.
Just for the listeners out there, as all this is true. However, if you're in an abusive situation, get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't stand for that kind of stuff. That doesn't fly. And that's just something we never had a problem with.
No, never.
You take a seat, you planet.
Well, I'm going to leave it at that. Happy anniversary, Mom and Dad. And
thank you.
Thank you for being on the show.
We love you.
Love you, too.
Love you. You roll
it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
And that's the end of this joint, my friends. The Radical Russ Show is planted, grown, harvested, trimmed, packaged, and rolled up by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
I don't think that will be necessary.
Lord, not this again, Willoughby.
Why do we do this again?
Oh, what a perfect capstone to end the America 250 celebrations that began. You remember this, Donald Trump was going to have the Great American State Fair out there in Washington, D.C., and had all these acts that he named on. This is when I did my last podcast. They were starting to, the previous podcast before my hiatus, I should say. They were just starting to get this thing, and Millie Vanilli wouldn't show up, and the Commodores wouldn't. Nobody would show up, right? Millie Vanilli got credit for not singing. Yay! So everybody canceled on him, except for one guy. Robbie Van Winkle, that is Vanilla Ice, who I learned this week is the same age as myself. So, Robbie Van Winkle, yeah, they've got a big piece on him on the Atlantic Magazine and how he's talking about how he'll play for anybody. He'd play for Kim Jong-un. He'd play for Putin. We got to just get all this politics behind us and everybody get together behind the power of the one hit song that he had 30 some odd years ago. So, he was the lone holdout that was going to perform at this America 250. And as this thing, this Great American State Fair was happening, of course, Trump complained that all the third-rate, no-talent, nobody-cares-about-them artists wouldn't play, so he had the military bands and singers perform because you can order them to.
God, I played in the Army band too. If I had had to have played for one of these things, oh my God, how many clams would I have thrown in that night? Anyway, so this American 250 thing happening and nobody shows up. Right, they show these very sparse, empty fields. I saw someone on Blue Sky comment that it was great that they designed to have one attendee from every state show. Like 50 people out in a field, right? And so they were still going to go ahead with the Robbie Van Winkle Vanilla Ice concert, except then it was postponed. It was canceled due to inclement weather. Yeah, the rain showers and the thunderstorms coming in. And so inclement weather. So Vanilla Ice canceled his performance. And yet the inclement weather never happened. Not even the rain showed up for Vanilla Ice. Even the weather wouldn't be seen at this damn thing. So it's a total bust, and it couldn't be more fitting. And such a contrast when you see Trump's D.C. empty and barren, and you got the National Guard troops everywhere, and you got the reflecting pool having tarps all around it. The Kennedy Center's got a tarp on it, and the East Wing is all torn down and sitting in rubble. I mean, just a wreck. Godzilla couldn't have done a worse job in Washington, D.C. And then you compare that to the joy you're seeing in New York City at the Knicks winning, and the joy at the Obama Presidential Center opening up, and all the top list, you know, A-list acts, you know, Springsteen and Stevie Wonder and all these cats showing up to play. It couldn't be more of a contrast of the two Americas, the choice we are facing as we move forward into the future. And like I said in the earlier rant, that 2028 needs to be the backlash to the blacklash. We've got to turn this country around into the America it can be, the one that was the slaves that overcame abolition, the immigrants that overcame prejudice, the gay people and the women who fought for their rights. That's the kind of America I root for, the kind of America I want us to be, and the kind of America this podcast is going to stand for. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as RadicalRust.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRust.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next week, take care of each other.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
And thank you, Daily Beans Podcast.
All right, next up from Anonymous, he, him. Hi, AG and DG, regular listener doing my gigs, driving things to people and people to things. Just wanted to give a shout out to my parents, John and Jackie, who on Friday are celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. 24 years ago, we put together a 60th birthday celebration for my dad, who'd been very ill, and we thought it might be his last celebration. Now, 24 years later, and he made it to his 60th anniversary, and we couldn't be happier. His health isn't the best these days, but he's still kicking it as a curmudgeonly blue dot in a very red Idaho. My lady love and I are road tripping from our home in southern Oregon, and my brother from his home in Portland to the Idaho-Oregon border town of Ontario, birthplace of the tater tot, where we've got a Vrbo for the family since we won't venture into the handmade state anymore. For my pod pet Tara, I'm submitting a picture of our GMC Barcadia guarded by our chaos of four obvious chihuahuas ready for the road. I assume a chaos is a collective noun for a group of chihuahuas. Look at these babies. Ooh, I like that decal work or paintwork on the side of your vehicle. That's very cool. And the babies are adorable.